What did you have for breakfast today?
Pancakes.
Pancakes?
Yeah, banana pancakes with coconut yogurt.
Just good old wheat flour?
No, no, no. We're doing a special F45 diet at our place at the moment. So it is bananas and eggs and cinnamon. And then, that's it in coconut oil.
This podcast is brought to you by Morale Media. Are you an entrepreneur or maybe a marketer who wants to grow their business through content production? Maybe you're sick of dealing with agencies or want an outsourced solution that actually fits a budget? Well, Morale Media, our business, can help you with simple and affordable content production, saving you time and money by taking away that pain of producing the content. If you want to learn more, just head to neural.com/media, which is NEURALLE.com/media. Play around with our pricing. Have a look at all the different options that you have. Request or consider requesting a callback from me personally. If you have a friend that runs a business or is a marketer, do send them our way. It will help us keep the lights on and producing more juicy content. Listeners to this show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. If you want to learn yourself as to how to create content, maybe you want to make a podcast or your very own video, just download our free series on how to create a podcast and video at the very bottom of neural.com/media. Welcome to another episode of Uncommon, the podcast that helps you build your knowledge, skills, and mindset through interviews with unique individuals. My name's Jordan Michaelides, and I'm your host. In this episode, I have for you Claire Tonti. Claire is the CEO of Planet Broadcasting, host of Just Make the Thing podcast, and sometimes known as Mrs. Sunday Movies. The Planet Broadcasting business was one of the first true bootstrapped podcast networks in Australia. And early on, Claire was able to scale out the work she was doing for her co-founders, James and Nick, through Mr. Sunday Movies and The Weekly Planet. By bringing on a stable of notable local podcasters such as Will Anderson and Charlie Clausen. The inspiration from American brands like Earwolf is clear, and one of the reasons why I wanted to pick her brain. The Planet Broadcasting team are the locals we definitely look up to, and in my opinion, the indie leaders in this game here in Australia. This is a great episode. We covered many things, including being a wedding singer, how she met Mr. Sunday Movies, her influential father, Planet Broadcasting and its business model, tips for starting a podcast and deciding when to take the leap into your business. If you enjoy this episode, subscribe on your app or consider leaving us a rating. If you want show notes, as for all episodes, you can just head to neural.com/podcast. That's NEURALLE.com/podcast. But thank you so much for listening, our regulars for coming back, our newbies for giving us a shot. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Claire Tonti.
Hello.
Hello. It's funny listening to your podcast and now hearing it through my headphones and just meeting you as well. I don't know if you find that if you've interviewed guests, but like there were times where I interviewed like Tom Ballard and Dr. Carl. That was really strange. Really, really strange. Like you hear them on the radio back in the day and then bang. It's like here on your own device. I don't know. There's something surreal about it.
It is very surreal. I find as well, it's strange meeting someone that you know so well that has no idea who you are or at least have never met you. So it's that balance of trying to not come off as a crazy person and be like, hey, Tom, it's so nice to meet you. And he's like, hi. Or but not be too standoffish. It's quite a strange thing.
It must be weird for them. Like I think about you guys have got Will Anderson and Charlie Clausen, and like I can imagine how many people would just fangirl in front of them all the time because they stand out so, like Will in his haircut, you know, like they just stand out so much. You can see him walk. I've seen him so many times during Comedy Fest just walking over here. Lauren to me the other day was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I was walking behind Will Anderson the whole time, but I was too scared to go up and say hello.
Well, he's so tall as
he's
well,
so
Will.
He's so fucking tall.
Yeah, but he's the nicest guy. If you said hello, he'd say hello back. He's awesome. Really cool.
Now, I was thinking about icebreaker questions to ask you.
Oh, okay.
There's two that came up in my mind.
Okay.
The first one was, what do you miss about being a wedding singer?
Oh, gosh, that's clever that you knew I was a wedding singer for a very short amount of time. Oh, I love being on stage in front of people and the love, not for me specifically, but watching people in love. But, yeah, I definitely miss being on stage. I love that vibe.
Yeah. The story I found was through an interview. I can't remember which one, but you were talking about how, like, some bride got stuck down the aisle or like her dress, she had an issue with her dress.
Oh yeah, that was in an artist garden up in the Dandenongs, and the mother of the bride kept kind of signalling to me because they only wanted this very short lyric of a particular song, and I just had to keep singing this like two lines over and over again. I probably did it like 20 times or something while the mother of the bride's like, just keep going like this. I'm using an action on an audio medium, but yeah, it was quite funny, and I had to, by the 20th time, it had lost a bit of its romance.
It's so funny that, because we were at a wedding recently and I was like, why are these people taking so long to come out? Like, it would be like one, you know, the bridal party and the groomsmen would walk out together and then we'd be waiting for like a minute. And then like the next, and it's not like they had to walk far. And I realized then like they'd chosen just a really long song. Like, it was like 6 minutes. It wasn't anyone singing. It was just, you know, they were playing it on some device of some kind.
Yeah.
But it was just that I've never, now that we're wedding planning, I've just thought about that sort of stuff and how funny it is. Like, all these little things that you got to get just right.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's the perfect day.
I know. People have put so much thought in. It's funny because I loved our wedding day. Like, oh, gosh, hands down. And the song we had was The Book of Love by Peter Gabriel, which is just from Scrubs. We used to watch Scrubs a lot. It's gorgeous. It's in the last episode of Scrubs. But it's just, it makes me cry every time. And our beautiful friend Mo sang it while we walked down the aisle.
Oh.
And I'm such a showman because a wedding is all about show, right?
It is, isn't it?
About the love of the person that you're with. But it's this sort of shared experience. And so I think that's what's beautiful about singing at people's weddings and also getting married.
Yeah.
The shared experience with all the people that care about you, that you care about, and all of the stuff and all of the headache that goes in the lead up kind of falls away in that moment when you walk down the aisle. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just you and that person, and yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we're starting to realize it is a bit of a show as opposed to
yeah. It can be. It definitely can be. But I think if you keep at the heart of it that it's just about, in the end, the two of you sharing what you love and with the people that you love and
yeah.
that you love each other. That's the biggest part of it. Oh, so corny.
Now, I was thinking about how the two of you, James, your partner,
mm-hmm.
how the two of you met, and this sort of rolls into how the business came about. But where did you guys meet? You both primary school teachers, you weren't working at the same school, were you?
Gosh, that would be a great story, wouldn't it? No, nothing like that. We were at uni, so I was 19, and we were at a fundraising ball. We used to volunteer for St. Vincent de Paul for kids camps, and I was working sort of around organising the camps, and I'd set up a little committee to do some social justice work, and he would go to this fundraising ball every year because he did kids camps, but also all his mates would come along because it was like $50 for a ticket and or you could drink beer or something at that point. Yeah, and we just sort of ran into each other there, and yeah, that's how we met.
How did he ask you out? Or did you ask him out?
Oh, no. So he came over and asked for the beer off my table. It was very smooth.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, because there was just obviously jugs of beer everywhere. And then he kind of sat down and we had a chat, and we've sort of never stopped chatting since. So
wow.
It was just really natural. I think about it now, and I think about people who meet in all different situations and now online, and I guess we're really lucky that we just met and clicked and had so much in common. And he's going to love hearing this now because I just found him so funny immediately. We just had a chemistry immediately. And then, yeah, we were just insufferably over, head over heels after that for about a year. And it wears off.
I remember, with my own partner, the first time we actually, she keeps telling me this, the first time we actually met, I was drunk at a party. We were like 17 or I think I was 18 at the time. And I don't remember it at all. But then somehow I got chatting to her and we first got to know each other over MSN.
Oh, do you remember MSN?
So we were like chatting on that, and then it was at a party, and like it's the same thing. I thought there was instant chemistry, but little did I know, like 3 months, and she didn't want a bar of like going out on a date, but she wanted to hang out, like, and we got to know each other as sort of friends first. But eventually she was like, "Yeah, I'll go out on a date with you." It was like, I think I asked her to the formal or something like that. And then after that point, we were dating. And then 11 years later, here we are.
Oh, planning wedding.
Planning a wedding. It's very interesting. If you think back to your earlier years and your own childhood,
mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to whether there's any sort of principles or lessons that you hold with you today that was taught indirectly or directly by your parents at all.
I had a really interesting, I think they're interesting, family and upbringing. My family's very, very Catholic. My dad is a writer and my mum's a doctor. And so...
Are they, I'm guessing by your last name, Italian?
Yeah, dad was. Yeah, he passed away about 4 years ago.
Right.
So he's Italian, mum's not, mum's Irish.
Okay.
But they both... had very strong opinions and deeply held beliefs in Catholicism, but also in spirituality and philosophy and medical ethics was my dad's background. And so I grew up with a lot of heated debate and discussion. There were always sort of people ringing the house to interview dad on particular topics like abortion or euthanasia. He was really strident in never following the crowd, deeply thinking about what you believe in, then backing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And he always thought really differently and out of the box, which when I was a kid meant that I was mortified by everything he did. You know, like he would turn up to a dinner party in full tuxedo and tails for no reason, just for fun. Or
what a character.
Yeah, he was. He was a big character and really beloved and respected by people from both sides, left and right of the debate. And he often did a lot of work with politicians. He worked a lot with Canberra. He also worked a lot with the Catholic Church in trying to unpack their, ethical guidelines around bioethical issues. But he also dealt with a lot of illness. So I grew up with a dad who, before I was born, when he was about 21, 22, he was diagnosed with kidney failure. And so he was told he wouldn't live past 30. So he was such an intelligent guy and was going to do law. And when they told him that, he decided to just follow what he believed in and decided to do philosophy and ethics and bioethics and just follow what his interests were because he just didn't think he'd be around.
Wow.
And so it just coincided with a time when he was about 30 where transplantation and medical ethics were really coming to the fore. And there are a lot of things, particularly in the 80s, around ethics and guidelines for hospitals about, when brain death occurred and setting, guidelines around what doctors will or won't do from an ethical standpoint, particularly around abortion and euthanasia and all those big life questions. And so Dad at 30 was, on the board of St Vincent's Hospital and the first medical ethicist in Australia and just this real force of nature. Like I think I'm 33 now and I just can't even imagine leading a team of senior surgeons at 30. But he was such a force of nature, I guess. His sheer will. Like he lived to be 56 without a transplant. He never had one.
Really?
Yeah, he decided and I don't want to speak for him, obviously. There's lots of reasons why. One of them was he was concerned at the time about the procedure and the way that people diagnose brain death at the time. So he decided, plus for medical reasons for himself as well, he decided not to have a transplant. So he lived with dialysis for the best part of 30 years. So
wow, 30 years with dialysis. Mm,
yeah, yeah, about that. And so I grew up almost my entire childhood, really. I was in prep when he started on dialysis. He dialyzed from home. So I grew up in a household with this sort of writer who was always writing. He wrote a lot of books and textbooks and lectured. We sort of had TV cameras over at the house a lot, and people either loved my dad or really disagreed with him. And so there was like times where I'd be in the supermarket and a lady would come up and be like, "You're the man that always says no." And he would be like, "Well, there's two sides to every story." You know, he was very thoughtful and measured in lots of ways. But anyway, he always stood for really deeply thinking about your life and what it is that you want. And because he lived with the notion, and I think as a child even, I understood that he wouldn't be around forever because he was always in hospital. And so probably lived with the gravity of that
situation.
Of that situation. And then also the flip side of that, which is that life is impermanent. Mm. So if there's stuff you want to do, bloody do it.
I can see how much of that would have, I mean, just even the little things, like how he thinks open and creatively, how he is extroverted, like that, you know, the fact that he could think out loud with those ideas, he'd have to be if he's in those positions. Mm. But also, like, yeah, the fact that indirectly you have to deal with the realities of life. Like, I remember when I was 5, and I'm only learning this now, it's affected my own, I've got this sort of health anxiety, because when I was like 5 or 6, my grandfather passed away and we were living at home with them at the time. So like my brain couldn't process, like I have a warped perception on disease and death and stuff like that, as I've learned. And then 3 months later, it's like, bang, grandma has to have open heart surgery. So like it's fascinating. If that affects me, then I can only imagine you've got this sense of understanding of the importance of life, I guess.
Mm.
Like it'd be quite profound. Which is very, very interesting.
I guess so.
I'd say, I mean, it may not, like you may not think about it on a day-to-day basis, but you could see how you'd have that better understanding. Like some people just sort of carry on through life and they're not really touched by anything.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I'm not wired that way, probably genetically as well as the way I was brought up. And sometimes it's exhausting because you are constantly overthinking your choices and your impact on others and your impact on the world, and are you doing enough and being enough? All those big questions that we grapple with. But the other side of it is that also you realize life is short and you've got to be courageous, and the big scary stuff in life ends up being the best stuff if you can be bold enough to grab it, you know? But it also doesn't come easily. So, you know, there's downsides to also trying to think deeply about the choices that you make.
100%. I'm terrible at doing that. Sometimes I think too deeply about the things that don't really have much. Like, how often do you find yourself sitting there going like, oh my God, what am I doing? How, you know, do you, like, you must have ways that you're constantly measuring yourself against, right?
Oh yeah, completely. And I think living with both my parents are very high achievers. And so I don't know about your family, but living with people who are high achievers means that they never put any pressure on us to be or do anything. And all my siblings have explored different careers, but we've innately absorbed this really ability to be really tough on ourselves and want to push ourselves and get out there.
It's the immigrant mentality. Like as you probably got from my last name, my family's Greek, but it's the same situation. My mum is just Australian, sort of Irish background, Catholic as well. And then dad's family is Greek Orthodox. And it's just, it affects you in many ways you don't realize. Like that sort of passion you spoke about earlier at the dinner table, like when was it? Sunday night, we were out for dinner for my mum's birthday. And we were debating on like when is the right age to let kids to do things on themselves, like go by themselves down to the park and stuff like that. And it got to the point where my dad was like, look, enough. I've had enough. And like everyone, see, we're like super loud and everyone else in the restaurant is just like their quiet selves and everyone's like looking at us all the time because we're just so loud. And I can imagine that would be very similar for you growing up. But it's funny that it's funny how sort of that passion for things folds into your life. The early years of podcasting, it was interesting doing that research about how you guys got into it through a few different interviews. I know you were originally a teacher, and then during your maternity leave for your boy, you were sort of working on James's podcast. It was the Weekly Planet that you were actually doing the ad sales for, not Mr. Sunday Movies, right? Or were you doing both?
It was sort of an amalgamation of both, really. So I'm in the background, James is super creative and loves the video content and all of that, the stuff that he started with Mr. Sunday Movies. And then from there, the Weekly Planet was kind of born. In the early days, he just needed a lot of room to let him to be creative, and he tried a lot of different things. And I was sort of always there, but just trying to be as supportive as I could, because he's got this brain that if he's not making something, he's miserable. So he really has to be constantly creating stuff. But the flip side of that is that he doesn't like paperwork. He doesn't like admin. I mean, who does? But he's not got a brain for that stuff.
Yeah.
And so naturally, as Mr. Sunday Movies grew and the Weekly Planet grew, I started doing sort of advertising for both. And I guess the background and the foundations of what became our Planet Broadcasting and our company. So he does the creative and focuses on that. And then I do that kind of nuts and bolts. Like, I remember back for years, James never told anybody what he did at all. Like, it was a real secret even from his family. And so I would have to often make excuses and be like, he's playing video games a lot.
Why did he keep it such a secret?
I think because it's so much a part of who you are, right?
Yeah.
And you have to be quite vulnerable to be like, I'm making this thing about Spider-Man. and it's not for everybody. Not everyone's into Spider-Man or into that world. And I think also he wanted to make a go of it without having to worry about people's expectations.
Yeah.
And so, like, I remember we went on a trip to Bali. We were living in an Indigenous community for a while, teaching up there. We went on a trip to Bali and we were in this beautiful resort, and he was just squirreled away in the cupboard of, like, this beautiful hotel room, just recording about Spider-Man while I was, like, lying by the pool. You know, it's that kind of stuff, I think. But that's the stuff you do when you're creating something and building something. And
you love it.
Yeah, and you love it, exactly. I mean, as a teacher, my favourite stuff was helping kids to be creative and giving them the space to find what it was that they really loved. And that's what I miss about teaching. And I think what I love doing with James too is being able to give him the space and talk to him about his creativity and what he's making and what would make it better, or that kind of strategizing stuff. And that's what I miss about teaching. I don't miss some of the other side of it, but I miss the kids and I miss helping them find their creativity. Like, I know one of my students, I don't know if you know the musical Matilda by Tim Minchin. So one of my beautiful students, I used to write musicals with the kids, and as I was student wellbeing coordinator for a while. So we put together a musical and I was looking for a lead role for this particular one, and I like did all the auditions, and everyone in grade three takes it super seriously. You know, they're like practicing out the side. One little girl came in afterwards and said, I'm too nervous to perform in front of everybody, but can I sing for you? And so she sang, and she was just so brilliant but super nervous and wouldn't even look me in the eye and was really shaky. And so I went to her teacher afterwards and said, I think this little girl's right for the role, but I'm just not sure if she can hack it. I don't know if she's going to be too nervous. And her beautiful teacher knew her so well and was like, oh, she's born to do it. Don't you worry. She will pull it out of the park. And she did. She was fantastic. She worked so hard. She was so diligent. She had a little clipboard and just came in so amazingly. And her mum's an actress, I found out later, but I really got to know her. And then it was probably 6 months later, she emailed me and told me that she was auditioning for Matilda. And I sort of thought, oh, good on you, mate. You know, like lots of the girls, a lot of kids audition for Matilda, like hundreds of them. And the auditions are really grueling, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of kids with like professional show parents who are pushing them.
Oh, God, like Honey Boo Boo stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking, oh, you're so beautiful. Good luck. And, you know, it's all a learning experience. Anyway, and she emails me a couple months later and said, I'm Matilda.
What?
Yeah. And she became Matilda in the stage with, there's, I think, three other girls. And that musical is just so incredible. And it was very similar to the one, well, a similar kind of story that we'd written as her part in my show. Not that I'm saying it's similar to Matilda by Tim Minton at all. It was just a kid's show.
Tim, g'day.
Yeah, exactly. Claire's g'day. No, it wasn't anything like that. It was very simple. But I just felt, it was just really, I remember because it was, the show that we did was just about being bullied and standing up for yourself and not being afraid to be who you are and be different. And Matilda's got a very similar theme to that. And I remember going to see her perform Matilda, and I just cried through the entire thing because I've never seen someone born to do something. You know, like they must have just seen something in her having, she'd done choir before that. You know, she'd never done a show.
Do you know if she's still acting now?
Yeah, she is. I got a little email from her quite a while ago. So she is definitely, it's definitely her passion. So it'd be interesting to see where she goes next.
But, I was thinking before about that, like, you know, whether it's a personality trait or elements from your former career as a teacher, I was curious as to what do you think has really helped you now with forming and running this essentially podcast network? Like, do you look back at things and go, oh, God, I'm glad I did that in my former life?
Oh, look, I don't think anything is wasted. I mean, that's for sure. And I think sometimes teaching has definitely helped me in working the way that I do now, I think, for sure. And just even working with people, but also understanding how to listen to people and how to, I guess, organise teams and tech from a tech perspective. Teachers are some of the most gifted with tech ever because they have to be, because they have to be at the forefront. So a lot of what I did in teaching kind of educated me around, I don't know, Google Apps and, you know, interactive whiteboards and all of those things. And so it's and even building websites, all of that stuff. So being able to multitask, I think, has really helped me. But obviously Planet Broadcasting is still on a journey. So we'll see how it goes. I hate that word journey, but I can't think of anything else.
Yeah,
so,
it's one of those things. It's, like how else can you phrase it?
Yeah, correct. Exactly.
So with Planet Broadcasting, I guess the interesting part was that you were speaking about before, that you basically were selling ads because you guys didn't think mid-roll could really do it as well, I think, is what you were saying, which makes sense. I mean, it just makes so much sense to sell your own ads from an economics point of view, from a targeting point of view. It's just like you're more, I don't know, like you feel what the audience needs, if that makes sense. If you're going to do ads, you may as well do something that they like. I was curious, and we were speaking before downstairs about, you know, the similarities and how Lauren and I have started out, and although you guys focus on sort of the ad direction, we went in the creative direction. But the biggest thing for us right now is like when to go full time, you know? And I think you said for 4 to 5 years, you guys were sort of battling with that question and like incrementally chipping away at it. So how did you do that? Like, did you have goals for we're going to make this amount of money, or like what was it that you sort of checked off each time?
Yeah. It's funny because James and I are not very methodical or planned. It's sort of shocking. I mean, we are in some ways, but it all just kind of happens in a big hot mess and somehow works out. I think, oh, look, we do plan and strategize. But I guess for us it was that we were starting to earn an income, really. And then James started, I was still working full-time teaching, and James kind of took a day off and was 4 days one day and then 3 days, 2 days. And then really the catalyst was when my son was born for me. I was on maternity leave and I could have made the choice. I didn't really know. Once you have kids, it's a bit of an adventure in itself. So you just don't know what little person is going to turn up in your world and then how you're going to feel as a parent on the other side of it. But really it was that we were earning enough revenue that then we felt really comfortable in being able to pay our mortgage and do all the things that we needed to do. And because I was naturally already on maternity leave, I just never went back. Yeah. But James left at the same time.
Right.
So it was when we felt like we could cover our teaching wages quite comfortably and felt solid in our idea.
So that's the key thing, that comfortableness in covering that. Because I thought about, oh, what if we just sort of, you know, pared back what we save each month, or like pared back this to sort of really refine the budget so we can do it sooner rather than like, because I feel like, I don't know about you, did you feel that when he went full time, or when you guys sort of really went into this, that the projection was quite exponential? Your ability to do more obviously increased dramatically.
Because it's not, everyone's business is different. So in a weird way for us, James is working much less, and we were able to relax because he had been working for like 4 years, 8 hour days in teaching, 8 hour days at home. So that's like 16 hour days every day, including weekends, smashing it.
We're not doing too bad.
No, that's what I mean. Exactly. It's got to be workable and sustainable. I mean, for him also, it was a love. Like, he is doing something he absolutely loves and adores doing, and he would do it if he wasn't being paid. You know, he just loves what he creates and making. It's just not always joy, but definitely something that's a part of him. And so I think, yeah, you have to figure out what's right for you, because then there are other companies who say, jump in.
Just go for it
because you need the space and time to be able to concentrate on it. And, it really depends what's right for you guys.
What was the most trying time? Like, can you remember a few moments that really tested you guys?
Oh, good. How long have you got, Jordan? How long have you got? Gosh, there's been lots over the time. I would say just when my son was born, and then during that time but even before that, because he was working so much, and the year that we got married, my dad died. That was really, and I was working a lot and teaching a lot and trying to keep everything afloat all at once. And so was he. So he'd be sleeping under his desk during lunch times, and then up until 1 a.m. and then up teaching again. And then I was sort of grappling with my dad being in hospital for a couple of months. And then even though he'd been sick for a really long time, it was still a real shock for our family and a shock for his colleagues and everybody. So sort of dealing and grappling with that grief while also...
All at the same time.
Yeah, all at the same time while still working on the company. That was full on. So that was one time. I think the other point for us was when we started Planet Broadcasting, which was, I think, two and a bit years ago, something like that. Just being a parent and looking after our little boy, as well as running the company, like having a baby, as parents will tell you, is enough. Just a newborn is enough. So that's not sleeping. So, you know, I was kind of, because I was up anyway, I would be working during the night and feeding my son at all hours of the night while finding advertising and making up this company that didn't exist before, that I'd never worked in, didn't understand advertising, had never worked in that space before, was just kind of doing whatever I could to find advertising for the Weekly Planet, because we'd been with Midroll and it just hadn't worked for us. And saying that, look, I think the podcast landscape is very, very different now from where it was. But because we're this sort of strange, unique beast in that we have YouTube and podcasts, but also our audience is split between Australia and the States and the UK and Europe, it makes it quite difficult if you're a US-based podcast advertising company, or if you're a UK-based or Australia. So we're still trying to figure all of that out. I think your question though was what was tough. I think the other tough time was when I fell on my face last year.
Yeah, well, that's what I was, the other sort of icebreaker is, what happened to your two front teeth? Because I saw you tweet about it and it sounded horrible. Like, it sounded like you had a recent photo where they sort of had to do something and it was maybe a bit swollen, because they really get in there when you go to the dentist sometimes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's been a thing, because I had never, it's quite, Elizabeth Gilbert talks about, once you start something and you're on a bit of an adventure, be prepared because the universe throws at you some serious shit. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, you can swear.
Okay, good. And that, I believe, has been completely true. So the year that we started Planet Broadcasting, I'd never done anything of my own creatively or set mm-hmm. it up that way. I was always a support crew. And so Planet Broadcasting kind of started as a team effort and a partnership, expanding the advertising that I was doing already for Mr. Sunday Movies in the Weekly Planet to other shows. And so that year was huge for me. I went to a podcast conference in Copenhagen and did a speech and went to the ABC and did their AusPod conference. And so big things are happening. We bought a house at the same time. And so the weekend that I'd gone to AusPod, done this sort of, I was on the first panel of the day. I flew back. James was in LA doing Screen Junkies, which is like a big, big YouTube channel in LA. He'd never been to America before. Everything felt like it was taking off and we were so excited. And then we bought the house on the weekend. And then a couple of nights later, because I'd organized the house, buying the house and all those things, I was just running and I was trying to listen to a podcast to check for an advertising spot, plus walking the dog at the same time. And it was 8 o'clock at night, so I just put my son down, just trying to do too much, and then running down the street and just skidded on some gravel and just landed on a brick.
Oh, whoa.
So I just, and it was dark, so I was on the road by myself.
God, I can feel that.
Yeah, and it just shattered my three front teeth, like completely. I just felt them drop into my mouth. It was so gross. I'm sorry, podcast listener. This is gross.
It's terrible true, story. Though. These are some of the things that happens.
And so I'm lying there on the road and I could have easily been run over because it was pitch black and a car pulls up in front of me and this lovely guy, still don't know who he was, in his 50s, I think, opens his car door and in the reflection just looks at me and goes, "Oh, mate, are you all right?" And I'm like, and all my teeth and blood and all this stuff fall out and I'm hysterical. And so that was a really sort of really, really difficult kind of time. I had to call James and I've got a podcast still blaring, trying to figure out how to call him and he had to come find me. And it's been over a year and a half now, so I've still got dentures at the moment. Because in the end, normally when people do their teeth like that, they just rebuild the teeth on the existing roots and it's fine. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But for me, because I don't do things for halves, I really smashed them. And so they ended up, after three root canals, having to pull the three teeth out completely and then take out bone from my jaw and put in two metal bolts.
My mum's had this.
Oh,
she's
really?
Lost one of it. She lost one tooth, I think, as one of the canines. Yeah.
Oh.
It's so cool, though. I love it when she pulls it out. Like, "Mum, show us your tooth." She's like,
"Yeah, it's super great." It's kind of amazing once you start how many people have had that kind of stuff.
So many people have had so many. I mean, everyone's got their things with their teeth. I've been lucky, but every single adult in my immediate family has had something. Like, God, my dad's had some shocking things where he had to have like a crown replaced or something and the guy completely like ruined the tooth and it had to just like they had to put in a fake one. And I was listening actually to the Stepmates guys who were sort of like this comedy duo, but they have a podcast with another, so with a Melbourne based filmmaker, and this filmmaker went in and had, they like scanned his mouth, you know, they always get you in on the x-rays, and he was like, "Oh, We could take your wisdom teeth out if you want. Like, we could just do it here," because that's a procedure that happens now instead of putting you under. And it turns out they're actually impacted. They got the x-ray wrong and they like had to cut through when they cut through the gum, he realized, and then they cut the tooth in half and then it wouldn't come out and they had to cut that in half. So it was in like just down to the roots and he was like, you know, foot on the chest type stuff, like ripping it out. And he's like, I'm listening to this on this podcast. I'm like, because I've had heaps of teeth stuff. I've had a third adult tooth. So this, I think the one on the left turned the complete opposite way around. So I had to have that out when I was 11 and had braces at 12. And then I was 11, 12 for a year. And then I had an underbite. I used to have a really bad underbite, but like almost a centimeter. So they had to break my jaw, put it back, and then I had braces for 2 years.
Yeah.
Or 2 years before that, sorry. And I've had my wisdom teeth out. So I've had three operations on my mouth.
You poor thing, I feel you.
It's one of those things that you don't realize how brutal it can be. Like I really felt when you spoke about falling into that brick, I really felt that.
Yeah, it's no fun. Yeah, I'm so sorry. Because the thing that I don't tell you, because I'd never had even a feeling before. So I had a real phobia of the dentist. Oh, really? Before
I've never had a feeling or anything.
Ah, you've just had to have like teeth removed. Because when they take teeth out, like these ones particularly at the front, one of them was curled in. So then when they pull it out, it's the cracking sound and the whole...
Yeah, the cracking.
Like you feel like your whole face is going to cave in when they get in there.
I can feel it now.
Yeah, it's no good.
Yeah, because it's really in there. Like the gums are really quite amazing, aren't they?
They are. So I'm actually getting my 3 teeth, because I've got dentures in at the moment. But on Tuesday, I'm finally getting my actual teeth put in.
Woohoo.
I know.
That's awesome.
It's very cool. Breaking news. It's really exciting.
You're going to be posting that on Instagram, aren't you?
Yeah, I totally will. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I will.
Sure. Now, part of all this is obviously Planet Broadcasting. This is sort of the baby now that allowed you to break those front teeth. I've got an idea as to what it is. The audience may not fully understand it. I'm curious as to, in your own words, what is Planet Broadcasting?
Oh, look, it's evolving. In essence, I guess it's a media company.
Okay.
So we make YouTube videos and podcasts, particularly Mr. Sunday Movies YouTube channel, which has almost 1 million subscribers now, 900 and something thousand.
Yeah,
James will kill me that I don't know the exact figure. I'm sorry.
I use his Marvel reviews as to whether I'm going to go see the movie or not, whether it's worth it. Just because I read some of the comic books as a kid and I'm like, have they ruined it too much? Do I want to see it? Blah, blah, blah.
And he's a pretty good gauge, I think, because he's not super nerdy in that. Well, he is a nerd, but he's not super niche about it. So I think he's got a pretty balanced view, I reckon.
Well, he's not doing like art house stuff. Like some of the reviews you see on this stuff is like, it's okay. It's just a movie.
Yeah, exactly. James kind of loves that whole idea of just you love what you love.
Yeah.
You know, you like what you like and it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we make YouTube videos and podcasts, and we also have an advertising component of what we do.
Mm.
The initial idea was that Planet Broadcasting was about connecting people and connecting the world in different ways, because we have listeners all over the world. So we wanted to do 3 things. We wanted to share with our audience really interesting, creative comedians and writers and content. We also wanted to connect those podcasts or those videos with advertisers who understand the media landscape and want to do something slightly different and work in the digital space like that. And then the third part was that we wanted to make the world a bit of a better place and fundraise. So every year we do a fundraising campaign, and to date we've raised over $150,000 for different charities.
Wow. So that was you did one for UNICEF for the Syrian war, you did one for Movember, and there's another one there, obviously.
Yeah, so we did Movember was for men's suicide and mental health. So we wanted to At every step of the way, we've been really careful in thinking about our audience and who they are.
Okay.
And we really love them, which sounds corny, but it's true, because they allow us to do what we do. And we just have the most incredible listeners, like people who are creative and they write and they...
Fan art.
Oh, my God, the fan art for the show is
It's amazing. If you go on Reddit, it's unreal.
It's so amazing. And we've just been so lucky. We've met some of the most beautiful people and really caring and kind. And we have a Facebook group now called Planet Broadcasting Great Mates that's got about 12,000 people in there. And just the stories of people sharing things. Or we did a Vans Marvel campaign and there was a girl who was feeling really down who couldn't get the shoes shipped to her where she was living. And so one of the other great mates who'd never met her before sent her a box of shoes, you know, or someone breaks up with their girlfriend, they all jump on and just really care about each other. And so for us, that is the most important thing, that we want to look after our audience. And so we try as best we can when we do advertising, because that's the predominant bulk of our revenue, that we choose brands that we believe in, that we think will be beneficial in some way to our audience if they need a t-shirt or if they need shavers or whatever it is. And nothing's perfect, but that's kind of the premise from where we start from is always, is it good for us, but is it also something that would be good for our audience?
It was interesting to me, you know, when you guys started out, you've basically got two options, right? You go the network route or you do creative. I know brands like Gimlet do both, but they're also like a venture funded brand and they've got all this money to play around with.
Yeah,
which
correct.
A lot of Australian businesses don't have. And so I was curious as to why did you decide to go that route as opposed to the creative side? Was it just simply because Mr. Sunday Movies, The Weekly Planet, these were decently sized audiences and this is what you could really get better at? Was it just that?
Well, I think part of it was that James and I, and James particularly, loves creative stuff, but he doesn't want to be the head of a creative team. He doesn't want to have 10, 20, 30 people underneath him. We work with beautiful editors and really funny guys who live, like one of our guys, Raw Collings, he's awesome and works for us and does editing, lives in, you know, Wales. And we've got lots of other guys who do great stuff, but it's always in pieces for Mr. Sunday Movies or The Weekly Planet. So I, at that point when we started Planet Broadcasting, had never made anything for myself in that way. And I didn't think that I had the skills to be able to do that. I just didn't I was too scared. Like I just thought we did at the beginning think that we could also do some branded content and I ventured into that space. But I also found that if I'm going to make something, neither of us want to make things that aren't about things that we're interested in in the end.
I can see that. I can see how, like, James in particular, he would get very, very focused on his thing. And if you sort of, it's sort of like if I was to come up to Lauren and sort of start mixing around her pencils, if she was like sketching something, she'd go absolutely ballistic.
Yeah.
And I can understand that because when you're a very open and creative person, you just want to do it the best that you possibly can.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a vision and a way of doing it. And I think for us also, it's freedom too. Mm. We really have learned over time that what we value is the ability to change and adapt and have freedom to do what we want. We didn't grow and James didn't start Mr. Sunday Movies to then end up in an office job. You know, like his nightmare is the film office space. You know, like that's his nightmare. And so...
It's so funny.
Yeah. And so look, at the beginning of Planet Broadcasting, I'd already been finding advertising for the Weekly Planet and I'd been really successful at it. And I felt I could help other Australian podcasters because at that time, the industry was just starting in advertising and there just didn't seem to be that many Australian podcasts with advertising on them.
Right.
Now it's very different and it's changed. So it'll be interesting to see where we go next. But at the beginning when we started, that was really the premise of it. And I felt like that was where I could help out other creatives. Also, Mason, or Nick Mason, who co-hosts The Weekly Planet, just adores the comedy scene and is a massive, massive comedy fan. He goes to everything. He takes the comedy festival off every year. He's a tram driver by day and night.
That's right.
Yeah, and he still does that. And so he just takes it off every year to go to all the shows. And so he knew a lot of writers and comedians. So it was kind of a natural progression that we would take some of them under our kind of umbrella.
So was that the catalyst? Did Nick mention it to you guys? Hey, I know these comedians. We could get them to start their own podcast and you can support them like you do with Mr. Sunday Movies and The Weekly Planet. Was it that the thing that made you go, we need to start Planet Broadcasting, or did you just have this idea in your mind?
I think it was that I was looking for more that I could do in the company. And at that point, I don't even know if we were a company. I think we were just a YouTube channel and a podcast. And I think it was just lots of James and Mace are always recording the pod at weird hours. So we were sitting around in our living room after we put our son to bed. And I was just talking about how I'd noticed there wasn't a lot of advertising in Mace. And we took on established shows. So it wasn't like we approached people to start podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
They were already established, but with a lot smaller audiences than what we had.
Yeah.
And we thought that we could grow their audience and then help them find advertising. And we've done that. I think, that's sort of where it began.
Yeah.
Really.
And I mean, you had, I think not long after the launch, was it Will and Charlie? Did they move over not long after that?
They did. Yeah. Cause Charlie Clausen was a big fan of the Weekly Planet and Mr. Sunday Movies for years.
So that's how it got set up. He's like, they've started this thing.
Yeah.
On in.
Correct. Wow. Yeah, yeah, that's how we met Charlie. And at that point, he didn't know what James looked like, so it was quite funny when they met. And they look quite similar, actually. They've got similar hair and similar beard.
Yeah, I could see that, definitely. Yeah. They've got that sort of, although Charlie's a bit more salt and pepper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although James is very salt and pepper, too.
Is he?
Yeah, he is now, yeah.
I haven't seen a recent photo of him.
Oh, no, he's
coming. This is why he needs to start doing video.
Correct. Well, yeah, you wait till this year. So, yeah, I think... I don't know where I have a sneaky suspicion that we might be leaning more towards creative in the next few years rather than advertising.
Yeah. Well, I was intrigued by that, like that whole model, like in the last, I don't know, in the last month I've sort of, I already knew about the Ringer, Earwolf and Gimlet, but I've never really dived deep into how they operate. The Ringer's an interesting one because it's sort of like a podcast slash entertainment network, but it's really focused on just like a sports stars, like culinary leaders and stuff like things that are really, really specific. Whereas Earwolf is sort of like comedians mainly, I think, or comedy based stuff. And then Gimlet is all really focused on narrative based podcasts. Mm. I know you were talking about the business model generally in this OzPod interview, but how does it work? Like, you know, do you guys go to someone and say, yep, we'll do all these things for you and we take X cut on advertising? Or what's sort of like the relationship like with these other podcasters? Mm,
that's generally the model, yeah. So it's based on, yeah, a revenue cut of advertising, yeah.
Yeah, and so in return you just like sell their ads. Is there anything else that happens around that? Like, do you make sure that they've got studio or... what sort of works out with that?
So really, the podcasts we have at the moment, most of them, other than The Millennial Divide, which is one that I produce with a couple of my friends, which is awesome and people should listen, is they record and edit and do all of that themselves, and we help them out from a hosting perspective and an advertising perspective. And then we also promote them on our website and through our social media channels. So we have Planet Broadcasting social media and a guy that runs a weekly newsletter as well. So they sort of are promoted through all of our channels. We also do cross promotion as well. So they'll kind of guest on our stuff or we'll guest on theirs to grow the channel. We also do a little bit of kind of cross promotion through audio as well. Yeah, so that's really how it works currently, yeah. Anyway, at the moment.
So it seems like as the person who runs the network, it's the main focus is how do you monetize this thing? Mm. You know, you guys have been pretty good for live events. Like you've done a decent amount of live events now, I think. I've just seen them here and there for various different podcasts. So you've got that. There's obviously the ads. There's patrons as well. Patrons, however you want to call it, as well. Do things like merch get handled by networks, or is that sort of depends on the situation?
I think it depends. For us, we value independence, and so our podcasts are very independent of us. So they handle all their own merch, all their own Patreon, all of those things. We obviously do our own merch for The Weekly Planet, Mr. Sunday Movies and Planet Broadcasting. So I handle a lot of that. And we also do have our own Patreons and all of those things. But predominantly the podcasts themselves are quite independent in how they run that stuff. Yeah.
So what does your day-to-day look like?
Oh, God. Never the same. Never the same. So usually, well, because I have a 3-year-old, so yeah. And he spends a lot of time at home with us. So he's out for 2 days or 3 days a week now, but generally he's home with us. So we kind of co-share the parenting. And so either one of us is with him or one of us is working. So I do a lot of work on my phone in different cafes, different spaces. I usually try and get up early and get a jump on the emails in the morning. We both go to the gym together every day when we can, or we take it in turns. I think it's really important for your mental health to do that. And then either we might be filming something or coming to meet someone like you, or on phone calls with companies we work with in the States or in the UK. So because of the time difference with things, I'm often finding that my mornings are jammed, mm-hmm. and then the rest of the day things are a bit quieter.
Yeah.
Because someone's generally US goes to bed or the things kind of switch off around 8, 9 a.m.
Yeah.
So I have to try and get up early enough to contact everybody and email everyone back and invoice and all those things in that morning period before the US goes to bed. And then the UK wake up, I don't know, in the afternoon, 4 or 5. And then the guy that we work with who runs our site, Collings, is awake then. So I might send him an email around that time. So, yeah.
And then you've got your own podcast.
Correct. Yeah. So sometimes I'm recording that, or like tonight I'll be zooming off to Brunswick because we record out of a studio in Brunswick. Or we record from home. So I generally record, just make the thing from home when I can or from that external studio. And I also produce the Millennial Divide. So we'll be there as well. So. Yeah.
You've got a lot on your plate.
There's a lot of stuff going
Selling ads, hosting a podcast, producing a podcast, doing live, like it's just nonstop. Yeah,
there's a lot of things happening all at once. Yeah. Now, I'm trying to be a present parent, I think.
It's very hard. I can see why you would want to get a studio at home. Yeah, that's where you're thinking.
Yeah, we already record from home in a setup quite similar to what you've got with the Zoom and mics, but we want a dedicated workspace. At the moment, everything's kind of all over the place. So we're currently building a studio out the back, and with a setup where, looking to start filming content. And so I think in the next couple of years, Planet Broadcasting will look very different.
Okay. That's intriguing. Now, the other thing I was thinking about is the talent that you have. I mean, you went from 2 podcasts to, I think there's about 12 to 14 at the moment from count on the website. How are you thinking about getting new talent? Do people reach out to you? Do you reach out to them? How's it sort of worked out? Or do people talk amongst themselves?
Sometimes people reach out to us. Sometimes I hear of a podcast, or I'm sort of, some of the creators within our network are making new podcasts and they sort of submit and see whether it'd be something we're interested in hosting. So it really just depends. But as we were talking before, sometimes bigger is not always better.
No.
And I think I wasn't sure at the beginning, because I'd never run a company or a business before, how big I wanted this thing to get and whether we wanted to pursue investment and kind of open it up. And I think at the beginning, I envisioned something like Gimlet or Earwolf, and it would be that kind of scale. And maybe at that time we could have done that, but I realized very quickly that I, like we said before, we value freedom. I think you have to work out what you value. And I don't want to end up being the boss of 100 people, and running things in that direction. It isn't something that interests me. So
yeah, it's something that we were talking about before. There's a book that I've got here. Where is it gone? It's called Small Giants. It's a very good business book. It's just about, I guess, brands or companies that have existed for at least 15 to 20 years that have built a, they sort of defined a category in a way, and they've built a business with like less than 20 staff. Or less than 10 staff in most cases. Some of them are just family run. And there's like 5 people involved. So I would agree with that. Like it's that sort of, I don't know what the headcount is for Gimlet and Earwolf. I'd be interested to have a look at that. But I can imagine as soon as you take on venture capital, as soon as you start hiring over like 30 people, it just sort of, it's not that it unravels, but it just becomes overwhelming.
Something different. Yeah. Well, I think in the end, you lose control necessarily of what you want the company to be or your core vision. Not necessarily lose it, but you definitely, I would assume, have to compromise what it is that you want to do. And then I think also the more staff that you take on, the more responsibility you have then to ensure that the company keeps growing. I mean, that's consumerism, right? And capitalism. Bigger is better. And And that's a lot of pressure, I think, because the digital landscape changes so fast. For us, being small means that we're agile. So if we want to change it up, like at the moment, we sort of have 4 full-time employees and that's it. And it works for us really well. And Mason still gets to drive a tram because he loves doing that. And I think for us, that suits us best. And I'm starting to understand that. I think falling on my face and all that stuff makes you reprioritize and think about what it is that you actually want your life to be and how you want to live your day. And I think growing up, as I did with my dad, who just didn't waste a second, it's made me realize life is too short to get too caught up in trying to, I don't know, hit the biggest heights. It's more about, are you doing work that fulfills you?
Yeah,
you know?
And I'd agree with that. I think I've learned that slowly over the last few years. In terms of leadership, you've spoken a lot about Earwolf. Are there particular leaders other than Scott and his team at Earwolf that you really respect and look up to in this space?
Oh, look, I think what Mamma Mia has built with their podcast network, I really admire. I think for a lot of reasons, Mia Friedman has created a company that's obviously, with her husband Jason, going really well. I mean, obviously, there are always decisions within companies that I wouldn't make myself, or there's, you know, and people have criticisms. But I think I admire her work. I also love what the ABC are doing with some of their podcasts. There's Monique Bowley, who's a podcast producer. I really admire her work. She was with the Mamma Mia Podcast Network and is now with ABC. And the Pineapple Project, which is a podcast that she's created with a comedian, Claire, now I've forgotten her last name, but she just makes some brilliant, really funny stuff. I also love This American Life. The title of my podcast, Just Make the Thing, comes from Ira Glass, and I am so in awe of what they make over at public radio, particularly in the States. And also I interviewed Helen Saltzman, who does the podcast Answer Me This, and also The Illusionist. And she is just so fun. Her and her husband now just travel the world. They don't have a fixed address. They're just making podcasts and living from wherever, just traveling. So
she's super fascinating. I remember listening to her interview with Tim Ferriss. It was really good.
It's so interesting. I interviewed her, and it turned out it was quite a difficult interview because it was over the phone, and she ended up in throat surgery the next day. So she had a really, really sore throat, and we'd been trying to catch up because I met her while I was in Copenhagen, and she's so fascinating. And I just, it was quite a difficult interview because she was obviously
struggling,
but she was such a trooper. And then, I saw on Instagram she ended up in hospital. So,
What was wrong? What did she?
Oh, I can't remember the name of it, but she had ended up having to have some kind of throat surgery. Yeah, it ended up with a scar.
Jeez.
I don't know whether it was an infection, she's an interesting person. And Chat 10 Looks 3, I love Lisa Alden, Annabelle Crabb, and the friendship that comes from their podcast. Oh, look.
I love Annabelle Crabb's interviews that she does that.
Kitchen cabinet.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love how, because cooking and eating is one of those things where you sort of really have to be yourself, I find.
Mm.
It's hard to sort of mask yourself because you're on the one hand, you're concentrating on speaking, but on the other hand, you're also concentrating on eating. And so it's sort of you can't control your own messaging in a way.
Yeah, it's definitely you get to see politicians in a really different light. And I love that because I mean, they often say that with kids, and I found with guys as well, that they often like to talk side by side. And you can often hear and learn so much more from someone when they're doing something else. Like I know, for instance, if you've got a little person and you really have a big conversation to have, having them in the car with you while you're driving is, A, they can't escape because they've got a seatbelt on, but B, there's something about not having the pressure of being, you know, like we are now and sort of side on. And I think that's something that Annabelle is also very disarming. You know, and she can have.
She does that really well.
Yeah, she does that really well. Yeah, so I could go on. There's lots of people I admire.
Before we jump into some short, fast questions, I was just curious, you know, if you were to speak to a total newbie and you probably get this regularly because I know I get it enough, and you guys are a lot bigger than we are, about what you do if you just started a podcast right now, how you go about it, what would sort of be your process. So I'm curious about that. What would you do if you just had to help someone start a podcast from scratch?
I get this a lot. Do you get this a lot too?
Yeah, all the time. Oh, I used to get it and I'd email them and I'd say, these are all the steps, and it'd be a really long email and they'd never do it.
Yeah.
So I'd basically say, like, look, we can do it for you. Otherwise, sorry. But we ended up creating like a blog post series about it. But that to me was like the bane of my existence for a year. I used to get that question. How do you do it? Like, where do you start? And some of it is just they're genuinely intrigued, but some are like, oh, I want to do that, you know, and then I never do it.
No, I know, because it's a lot more work, because you kind of think, oh, it's audio. You can just talk and then it's easy.
Yeah.
It's so much easier than filming something and, you know, there mustn't be much editing. And look, to be honest, a lot of shows, like The Weekly Planet, is not overly edited.
Yeah.
And you can have kind of a lot of different formats in podcasting. It's kind of what I love about it. You can decide to have something that's more a story and heavily edited, or something that has a lot of different audio layers and elements, like This American Life, or the Daily does that beautifully. Or you can have a conversation, like an interview podcast, or one that's more The Weekly Planet, which is almost like a chat show but with news and comedy. So I guess I – what was the question? You're asking me if someone was to start a podcast, where would they start?
Yeah, but by the way, how often do you have that in an interview where you're like, what the fuck am I saying? Yeah. Like, where am I going with this? I get that way too often. But
oh, my God. Yeah.
So what would you do, like, if you had to start one from scratch? What are the things you'd check off your list?
Yeah. The first thing I'd think about is to nail down the concept.
Yeah.
So nail down what it is that's feasible as well. And sometimes I say to people, maybe it's better to do a 6-part series than it is to launch into doing weekly episodes.
Get some pod fade.
Correct. I think also, and look, Just Make the Thing for me was an experiment because I'd never made something on my own before. So I just wanted to explore whether I could.
Okay.
And it was a way of talking that through. And so if I was... And I, you know, I've done over 60 episodes now, so I'd love to go back to the beginning and start again. But so if I was to start again, it would be nailing that concept, trying to really nail down what it is that you know about and love. What can you fit within your life? Because I think sometimes people bite off more than they can chew, you know?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, often people are an expert in something they don't even realize they are. Or the other thing is, if you want to do a chat show, think really deeply about who to do it with and find a partner in crime.
Co-hosts are such a good idea. Such a good idea. Like, we've noticed that, because I love, there's a YouTube channel called Charisma on Command. It's sort of a channel about analyzing persuasion. And they were analyzing, why did Joe Rogan become such a big podcaster? And one of the key elements was he always brought a friend along in a lot of different important interviews, because that person sort of became like a temporary co-host. You know, like, and you think you've got, like, I've got 7 pages of notes here and I think I've got it all mapped out, but there may be someone sitting there that just, you know, there's something that clicks in their head. And I find that co-hosts are such a really good way to get that. You know?
Yeah, definitely. And there is something lovely. I think that's why Chat 10 Looks 3 works so well, because people are desperate, I think, for connection. You know?
Like, we're social beings. Yeah.
We are social beings, and sometimes social media can leave us quite disparate. And so finding someone or two people and listening to a friendship, and that banter of a friendship, like, I think about Hamish and Andy, and that's at the essence of it. No one cares whether they're talking about chocolate milk or like farting into a bottle. What it is that they are friends.
It's the journey.
It's the journey.
The journey.
You know, but it is, it's that chemistry, and people just, it's just wonderful to see that grow. So if that's the kind of podcast, and I think that's what The Weekly Planet has done for a lot of people, is the friendship between Meso and James is what people come back for, even more so than the movie news.
I would 100% agree with that. Like, I just binge listened to 20 episodes of the Stepmates podcast, and I find that just the yin and yang of the two personalities of the stepmates guys just really, like, I just want more. Like, do you know what I mean? So it just makes you really appreciate it. And that thing about Hamish and Andy is so funny, because I remember speaking to Luke Kidgell, who's a comedian, and he loves Hamish and Andy. And he was just speaking about the thing that actually makes Hamish and Andy funny is the journey. Like, the fact that they go on this ridiculous, like, that, what was that perfume that he made? Andy by Hamish?
Yeah.
That to me is just, like, that is one of the most brilliant Australian memes ever made, because they made this thing and they sold out at Chemist Warehouse, this perfume. Like, and it's just an ordinary perfume, but yet they managed to do it and make it funny.
Yeah, I know.
All right, short, fast questions to finish you off.
Sure.
We got a little taste before, but what does sort of your morning routine look like each day?
A coffee.
Yep.
A nice strong coffee with soy milk. I'm dairy-free, and a whole lot of emails. And then I try now and go for a walk just with the dog, not for exercise, just to clear my head.
Yeah.
And I just go for 10 minutes around the block, and that's been a game changer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you a phone scroller in the morning at all?
I was, and I'm trying really hard not to now. I have my phone in another room because I was waking up at 5, 6 a.m. and just answering emails from bed. And then that puts you – then my son wakes up and suddenly chaos ensues, and I haven't had a second. Now I try really hard to get up. I go for a 10-minute walk with the dog. That's just about breathing. I really admire Cheria Pitt, and she has this beautiful morning routine where you do 3 gratitudes and then ask yourself, what is it that could make this day great?
Okay.
And so I found I'm trying to protect my mindset, because I think if you spend too much time online looking at screens, and look, I think Joe Rogan talks about this, Tim Ferriss talks about it too a lot. That if you don't protect your mindset, you can, particularly when you work in the digital space, you can end up with anxiety and a lot of things. So for me, that's really precious, that little 10-minute walk, the what am I grateful for, no screens, no podcasts, because I was listening to a podcast every minute of the day if I wasn't working, and that's not healthy either. So in an ideal world, I mean, obviously that would be my morning routine. Get up, go for a walk, 3 gratitudes, what would make today great? Nice strong coffee while I answer my emails, and then I get my son up.
I think that's a good way to do it. I think that because I just finished reading Deep Work, that and because I have this health anxiety, I've realized how distracted I can become with phones and screens, and I've made some pretty rapid changes in the last 6 months, but it's always been there in the back of my mind, being a fan of Tim Ferriss in particular, like that sort of optimizing life thing that I love, but it sort of really just creeps back in, particularly social media. Like, I'll make any excuse, like, oh, I definitely need Instagram on my phone because, like, I work in media and, like, I need to be paying attention to this. But now I have, like, a 15-minute timer each day, so I can't really go over that.
That's great.
Evening routine, what does that look like?
So put my son to bed.
Yeah.
Depends. Some days it's put my son to bed, make dinner, go to produce a podcast or do an interview, because that. Or every week I also catch up with a group of girlfriends, because I find when you work by yourself or with my husband, but we're always at home, I miss that buzz of school, and I love being around people. And so I really miss that. And so every week I catch up with a group of girlfriends and we rotate through people's houses, and so have dinner at each other's houses. Someone cooks, and otherwise James or I cook dinner, and then we sit together with our son and eat. And we're trying to teach him gratitude too. So we we hold hands and we just say, what are we all grateful for, and go around the circle.
That's
before
awesome.
Tea. So, and music. Music's a big thing for me. We usually have a record, and we've got a record player. And there's something wonderful about holding a record, you know, rather than just having Spotify, which we use too, having actual records. So James and I buy each other records now as gifts for birthdays and Christmas.
Do you not allow the listening of podcasts at night?
God, no. No, we have no rules like that.
Because
we're always listening. James particularly is always listening to something.
Okay.
So, no. And look, this is all ideal world stuff. A lot of this goes out the window when life happens, or there's a big campaign due or video due or...
I can imagine.
Whatever.
Best purchase under $200.
Oh, best purchase under $200. That's...
Something that's impacted you... quite a lot.
Oh, look, that's actually a really hard one to think about because I'm not a big consumer-y person. Like, I don't, maybe the Nutribullet. We love
they're
that
so
thing.
Good, though. They're so
yeah,
good.
Yeah, we make a lot of smoothies in our yeah. house and it's fast and I know I can shove in all of my stuff from the garden.
Good old breakfast smoothie in the morning. You yeah, can't beat it. You know correct. That you've gotten, like, you've started your day right. You've got your greens, you've got your eggs, you've got your protein, whatever.
Peanut butter. Yeah, exactly. It's all in there. And at least if all the rest of the day goes to hell, you've got your morning green smoothie started
exactly.
and you can feel smug. Oh, the smugness.
I love it.
Yeah.
I had a green smoothie.
Yeah, correct.
If you could have a billboard anywhere in Australia, where would it be and then what would it say?
Where would it be and what would it say? Oh, I'd have to say just make the thing, wouldn't it? And, oh, look, I love Melbourne. I just love it. And yeah. I love that. I love Flinders Street Station. And there's anywhere in Federation Square or up there on the corner.
Yeah, there's a
iconic.
Big billboard.
Yeah, yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, on the just, corner of above actually the hotel.
Yeah, which is, and now I can't remember.
And it's got
what
that
it's
portrait of Chloe.
Yes.
That famous portrait.
Yeah, what is that hotel called? It slipped my mind, but it's across the road from Flinders Street Station
yeah.
on Swanson Street.
I can't believe we've forgotten it.
I know, because it's so iconic and now it's gone right out of my head.
Anyway,
but yeah, that's
Lauren will
where
link
I
it.
Put it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, just make the thing, I yeah. think, is the because for me, that's what I always think in my head as someone who overthinks things. You just keep it simple.
And just do it. Mm-hmm. Well, look, Claire, it's been a real pleasure having you here. I've wanted to have someone on to talk about podcasting and the business for so long, and you're the first. I've been trying
thanks.
To find someone and thought, nah, not really worth it. But, yeah, what I think you guys are doing at Planet Broadcasting is fascinating. I've got the tune of James. He always, on all your podcasts, it's sort of brought to you by your great mates or something
yeah,
like that. And
yeah.
it's always in my head because I listen to ToeFop and I love Charlie Clausen because I'm a St Kilda supporter. And so
yeah,
the two
Charlie's
guys,
awesome.
What is it? Two Guys, One Cup is
yeah.
such a brilliant podcast. And just hearing all that, it's, yeah, I think you guys are doing some fascinating stuff. And
thanks
for coming on.
Jordan. Oh, thanks for asking me. It's been a pleasure. And you guys are doing incredible work too. It's great to meet someone else who's working with their partner.
Hey,
I'll have to meet Lauren too.
We're trying to replicate you, so.
Oh, God. It's a fool's errand.
Where can people find you on the interwebs? What's the best social media platforms, a website, etc.?
I love Instagram
okay.
at Claire Twenty. That's Planet Broadcasting is just planetbroadcasting.com. So you
yep.
can find all of our shows there, James's videos, his content, my content, and the Millennial Divide, all of the shows that we make, including ToeFop, is there at planetbroadcasting.com. I'm also on Twitter at Mrs. Sunday Movies, though I'm there less. It's a very angry place, Twitter.
It's yeah, I've had to move away from it. It's
yeah.
just because I'm sort of politically agnostic. I have people on both the left and far left and far right and close to center and all that. And it's just, it becomes a bit of a whinge fest, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I just think you've got to protect that mindset.
Yeah.
And you've got to figure out in your day what's healthy for you to have in your mind. And for me anyway, I love Instagram because I love images as well. But it's a very kind of inclusive space and generally really friendly and wonderful. So yeah, at
so.
Claire 20.
Awesome.
Well, look, oh, on my podcast, Just Make the Thing.
Yes, and Just Make the Thing. We'll make sure we yeah. provide links, guys. Claire, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jordan.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for making it to the end. Before you run off, we need your help to grow this audience. Subscribe on your podcast app. Subscribing will give you priority access and help your fellow-minded listeners find Uncommon, or consider sharing this with a friend who you think would enjoy these sorts of episodes, and this will go a very, very long way in helping us build the audience. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and Twitter, or consider subscribing on YouTube as well. You just need to search for Neural, NeurAlle, or consider following us on Instagram as well by searching Uncommon, UncommoN. But until next time, thank you so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or maybe a marketer who wants to grow their business through content production, maybe you're sick of dealing with agencies or want an outsourced solution that actually fits a budget, well, Neural Media, our business, can help you with simple and affordable content production, saving you time and money by taking away that pain of producing the content. If you want to learn more, just head to neural.com/media, which is neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing. Have a look at all the different options that you have. Request or consider requesting a callback from me personally. If you have a friend that runs a business or is a marketer, do send them our way. It will help us keep the lights on and producing more juicy content. Listeners to this show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. If you want to learn yourself as to how to create content, maybe you want to make a podcast or your very own video, just download our free series on how to create a podcast and video at the very bottom of neural.com/media.